You're listening to the CryptoCast podcast.
Welcome to the Crypto and Blockchain Talk.
Hello.
Hey.
Guten Tag.
Aloha.
Tere.
Shalom.
Hallo.
Namaste.
Ni hao.
Vivet.
Hello.
Salut.
Yassas.
Salve.
Ciao.
Bonjour.
Our podcast talks about the latest trends in the worlds of cryptocurrencies and the blockchain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Crypto and Blockchain Talk. And with me today is Jonathan Dunsmore, founder and principal of Dunsmore Law. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello.
Hello. There's a lot going on this week, and I'm not even going to cover during this podcast what's happening in terms of the SEC going after a load of scams and Ponzi's and God knows what. We're going to put that aside. And I just really want to go straight to the SEC charging ICO rating, which is basically a website which rates ICOs. Surprise, surprise. The SEC has charged ICO rating with failing to disclose that they were being paid to tout digital assets, which is kind of like reading the headline that says they just found out that the sun does rise every morning and sets every night. And by the way, thank you, Jonathan, for sending this to me, because I honestly thought for a minute it was an April Fool's joke until I realized we're in August. And we all know that I do agree with common sense all the time. I fight for common sense, but I have yet to see an ICO rating site that really won't promote anything under the sun, because they're getting paid to do it a lot of the time. And it's really quite interesting that this has only just really come to light. And I guess they're going to be the first ones to take the hit. Now, every ICO rating site is going to be analyzed, I would think, now. But just let's talk about this. What's your viewpoint on this?
It's kind of a duh situation, right? We're not building rockets here. This is fairly simple. If you're running an ICO rating service, you have to disclose when you're getting paid to promote something. You have to, put onto the bottom paid advertisement, something simple. This is really basic stuff, regardless of whether you want to delve deep into whether this is a security or a utility or commodity or whatever. And don't get me wrong, there is an argument to be made that if it is a utility, how are they really promoting it and blah, blah, blah. And does it fall under securities laws? And is the SEC the proper jurisdiction? There's a number of questions here, but I think for the most part, it's a good rule to have that, hey, if you're touting something, and they don't go into the specifics of what they were touting and all of that kind of fun and exciting things, to actually learn from it, which is a little frustrating, right? Because this is a settlement. They've both agreed that there was some naughtiness here and we should pay up. And so instead of making it a learning experience for everyone and saying this is what happened, this is specifically how we don't want a rating site to operate. They've basically said that they were getting paid. We don't know how they were getting paid. We don't know if they were specifically getting paid in those cryptocurrencies, right? So if you're being paid as a almost promoter of that currency, or are they just simply getting paid in Bitcoin to run a banner ad? We have no idea, because the SEC has not provided that kind of information, which is one of my frustrating points of all this, because we need to be able to learn, from these types of action. Most people are going to read this, and I've already seen some misinformation out there. This thing is only a couple hours old. That's kind of my biggest frustration is, you have to disclose when you're being paid as a rating agency, of course, and then also I really wish, and I know there's the possibility of a regulator listening to this, is actually pretty well. So I'm hoping that as things kind of progress, especially with settlement offers, because you can do a lot more in the settlement offer than you can with a traditional kind of final judgment or a ruling in the court, which, that would be public as well. But in these kind of situations, it should be an educational lesson as well. And it's not really that in this press release. There's not a lot of information to garner. And I really wish they would change that. I truly wish they would change that, because it's not just the U.S. that's looking at this. It's the entire world. And it's not really fair, to be honest. We're trying to play a fair game here. And it's not really fair to be like, these guys were bad. They were touting coins and not disclosing that they were getting paid. The end. They paid a fine. The end.
Well, definitely more information is needed, but I also want to make a comment on how ridiculously low this settlement, this fine was. It's $268,000. I mean, come on. It's ICO rating. Do you know how much money they have made off of touting these kinds of projects? Or just these rating sites in general? And quite frankly, it's really criminal. So many scams have been touted by these rating sites. And this is a really interesting space. A lot of people they've made a lot of money in a short span of time, and other people have seen it and they feel that they can go the same way. They are not doing enough due diligence. They're not really understanding how to read the information and process it correctly, which we're constantly explaining to people how to do and encouraging them to be very active in this. To have a fine of a little over a quarter of $1 million, is that really a punishment?
You know, that's a really good question. I think there's some territorial issues here that the SEC probably didn't want to poke the bear. This is a Russian entity. One of the things that the SEC mentions in the actual enforcement letter is that there was a notice that the information was in English. Well, a lot of the world speaks English. They directed some other kind of nuance and tried to get some type of business nexus to put it in, you know, the U.S. context. But it wasn't anything, you know, I guess the most damning was they had some people that actually visited the U.S. and were supposedly advocating for ICO rating, which is where their lawyers probably said, that's enough, it's better to pay up. But this is still kind of one of those situations where I'm not saying that the SEC could have lost this if ICO rating wanted to fight it, but I'm definitely saying that given the price they paid, it was probably not worth the fight. Like you said, it was probably just worth a cost of doing business. I've said that on Twitter, you know, where someone was trying to point out, oh, you know, I bet Coinbase is shaking in their boots. And nobody's shaking in their boots after this. If anything, this is a okay, let me call my lawyer and pay up before, you know, we get as the fines kind of increase, right? So the first guy or gal, if there's any, you know, gals messing up out there, that goes and and says, hey, we've messed up. They generally get the best deal, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they're the ones who get the sweetheart first deal. From there, it's this exponential, you should have known better, we've had all these cases, blah blah blah, kind of things that start coming out. So I imagine we'll see more, the fines will start to climb up, and I imagine that there'll be more of a nexus to the states as these cases kind of progress. But this is by far the first case, but it's definitely not the last.
But there's also something else that you brought up that I really do need clarification on. Why would ICO Rating, who is based in Russia, why in the world would they pay an SEC fine?
Because they don't want to, like I said, kind of poke the bear. They don't want the SEC to go after them. And unfortunately, the SEC is pretty powerful. If they have any assets here, they could be seized. If they are trying to access the U.S. market, or they're trying to, you know, play ball and do things properly, they probably didn't have, I don't know who their counsel was for the settlement or who they were being represented by, you know, during the operations before this, but I imagine that they didn't have U.S. counsel, so they were simply unaware that going to that country could probably create a business nexus, which means he would fall under the jurisdiction of the U.S. And so it was kind of a combination of, hey, do I really want to be barred from the U.S. forever because there's this default judgment against me for X number of dollars? And not to say that they would go after people individually or personally liable, but they could, assuming that they could track them down. And so it's one of those situations where, as you kind of said, it's easier to pay the fairly minuscule fine and continue with business as is. I imagine that we'll start seeing some ICO disclaimers and things of that nature, but I'm on their Twitter right now and I haven't seen any kind of news, so I don't know. We'll see.
Well, what's also really interesting, I mean, if you go to ICO Rating right now, if you go to that site, I can't find their company address anywhere. I can't find anything that says they are a Russian company, or I can't find anything about their location here. I'm wondering if you can.
I mean, I imagine what they did is they went to wherever this was registered, the domain And then kind of went from there. But you'd be amazed how many times the CFTC or SEC or even IRS just emails people and they respond. Now, there's a matter of jurisdiction there, but, you know, we can talk about the Bitfinex recent decision. But because of the beauty of the internet, these companies can be anywhere in the world. They can have servers anywhere in the world, and they can, as decentralization becomes more of a thing, it's going to be significantly tougher to shut down entire networks. And so, you know, one of the biggest kind of global concerns with DEC is that how do you turn off the power? Assuming that they're doing some hyper illegal market manipulation and all this other kind of stuff, does that just mean that nobody uses it and the markets kind of recognize that, hey, if I use, throw my own name under the bus here, John Dex, that it's going to be market manipulated and there's going to be all these bots and all these kind of naughty things that go on? Or is it going to be one of those situations where there's kind of a community around it and there's possibly an open source code that doesn't allow for market manipulation or the addition of bots, or if bots are identified, there's, you know, different ways to cancel those orders and all these other kind of clever mechanisms, that it is an ever-evolving situation. So, yeah, I mean, we're just going to have to wait and see.
Going back to the other question I asked you before, though, just to, and one more time, because my brain is trying to wrap around this. The SEC, the United States and Russia, I think everyone is still friends. Does the SEC work with Russian authorities?
You know, ICO rating isn't a kind of fly-by-night operation. You know, they clearly have most of their people's images up there, whether they're real or not. Who knows, whether they don't have their last names. It comes down to some type of treaty, whether it's an EU-US treaty. US has a number of treaties with Canada and Japan, Singapore, even Hong Kong, actually, dating back to pre-China's takeover in 1997. So there's a lot of kind of financial instruments and things that continue to be in play. And I don't know if they're using those mechanisms to go after these people specifically, but I know they have been done in the past. And so the rule is generally, if it is an offense in Germany and offense in the US, they get to take two cracks at you. Now, sometimes they only let you do one of them. Sometimes you'll only get trouble in the EU. But sometimes if it's a big enough issue, the US will say, no, we want them too, assuming it's not a capital offense or things of that nature. Most other countries kind of turn them over to us, quite frankly.
What is this going to mean then for people like ICO Bench and all these other ICO rating platforms? Because all of them are taking really good money, anywhere from 2 Bitcoin to 10 Bitcoin and the rest, depending on what kind of services you want. You know, if you just want a regular listing, if you want to be a featured listing, if you want to have your banners and advertising also on the site. I mean, it just depends on the site and who it is, but what's going to happen with the other ICO rating sites, and where does this start and stop, and what does it mean for the way that listings are done? Because it's so arbitrary as well, the way that listing sites give, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 10 stars. It's so arbitrary and so weird. And for the most part, I mean, it's a bunch of hooey. I implore people to do your own bloody homework. Don't depend on ICO rating sites to tell you whether or not something is good or not. You're going to get bitten right in the jacksy. So I just think, you know, what does this mean for the other ICO rating sites then?
This is a warning. This is the first shot, and unfortunately, it's the first victim. One thing, if you're, you know, I'm on CoinMarketCap, for example, and you're just giving information. You're not saying, this is the best coin, Stellar is amazing, and doing all these kind of things. You know, there's no banner ads, there's no that kind of stuff. They do allow for advertising on CoinMarketCap, and I have no affiliation with CoinMarketCap, but it's one of those things, as long as you're disclosing what your price point is, and it can even be in the terms of service, right? If you want a, you know, top rated spot or blah, 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 as long as you're disclosing it, you're generally in the clear. That becomes an FCC question. Well, actually an FCC and an SEC question. So we start to intertangle with government agencies, which is always fun. Going back to anyone who actually has a rating site now or a rating service now, it means that you're on notice. And once you are on notice, like I said earlier, those fines and fees go up. And if there has been any type of market manipulation or tomfoolery on your part, which generally means I have accepted, we'll go back and throw my own name under the bus, I have accepted John tokens and I am now pumping John tokens as the best thing since sliced bread. That could be considered market manipulation under the SEC rules, and you could actually be charged criminally. If that has been your previous business model or is your current business model, I highly recommend you contact a lawyer.
I'm perusing through the rating sites as we're sitting here, and holy smokes, there are so many lapses in judgment, and there are so many things here which I'm sure break the law, not just even in the United States, but in Europe. There's actually, even on ICO Ratings' own site, they actually have what your average ROI is in the 1, 2, 3. I mean, they can't say what your bloody ROI is going to be. What are they? Are they clairvoyant? What is this?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be very careful about making future predictions and things of that nature. When you have a prediction like that, oh, this is going to the moon, or this is, a Lambo-like coin, then yeah, you have to be careful, because people that act on that investment advice can, in theory, hold you liable for your false and possibly negligent misrepresentations. Now, will they do that? That's a whole other question, right? Because are you going to be able to trace down and track down someone who is a YouTuber, for example, in California? Yeah, actually, you probably get that guy or girl. Are you going to be able to track down some faceless, nameless, anonymous, for the most part, promoter? Probably not. Reaching his or her assets are going to be even less likely. So in the giant kind of grand scheme of things, you got to be cognizant of where you get your advice from. Unfortunately, fake news is all too prevalent in this society, and it's going to continue to be that way until we actually have blockchain solutions that kind of verify that this information is real and, quote unquote, actionable. The buyer should beware.
Well, I'm just going to reiterate again, do your own due diligence, do your own research. Don't depend on any website or any other human being to take care of your money except for you. It is absolutely ludicrous and irresponsible to think that that is somebody else's job and not your own to look after your money. So, enough said about that. Now I'd like to move on to what the hell is happening with Quadriga CX's auditors. What is going on there, Jonathan?
That's a great question. So this is a really frustrating case for a number of reasons. We've clearly, discussed how the lack of security protocol and has probably lost a lot of people their money.
Before you go any further, I just want to remind people that we actually did an entire podcast on Quadriga CX when everything really went pear-shaped. And that is episode 49, and it's called The Mystery and Misery for Clients of Quadriga CX and Lessons Learned. Again, it's episode number 49. So please continue, Jonathan.
Things are kind of wrapping up. They've found, I believe it's $25 million US, where EY, Ernst & Young, has charged roughly, I think, $1.3 million in auditing fees.
It's 1.6 million in fees that were basically paid out to people like Ernst & Young as well as lawyers, while the victims have received bugger all.
Yeah, and so that's kind of one of the biggest problems I have with bankruptcy almost anywhere in the world, but especially in Canada and the U.S., is that the lawyers and the auditors generally make out pretty well, and there's no reason for them to charge those kind of fees, to be quite honest. I am familiar with EY. I know some of their practices, as well as there are other firms that also have pretty exorbitant track records of charging an arm and a leg. And so when you're looking at this many harmed individuals and you're charging those kind of fees, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying they shouldn't get paid or they should do this for free, but when the pie is that small and they're taking that big of a piece, it's pretty troubling, which is one of the reasons that, I think we all kind of believe in blockchain for these reasons, that audit should be really easy. And, the people that do the deep dives into this stuff recognize that the auditor's job may be coming to an end. And so we'll see. But for the most part, unfortunately, the Quadriga clients and customers are, for the most part, completely out of luck. They're going to get pennies on the dollar if they are able to receive anything, because it's going to be a matter of proving that you had, at least in the U.S., I can't really speak to the Canadian bankruptcy court, but it's going to be actually proving that you are a person that you say you are and that you are a valid creditor in this case. And so for the most part, it's going to go to first the service providers. Unfortunately, EY and the law firm are going to get paid out first, and then it's going to go to additional creditors, anybody who, Amazon Web Services or something of that nature. And then it's going to continue down the line, just as any traditional bankruptcy, customers and shareholders are the last to be paid out.
I don't even know if that's the saddest part of all of this, because now the victims of Quadriga CX have also requested further information from EY, because apparently there was a loss of 103 bitcoins during the fund's recovery, which was supposed to be overseen by EY. Now, I am not a conspiracy theorist. I don't believe in really trying to stir the poo. There's enough people out there that will do it. But again, this smells weird to me. This whole Quadriga thing from the very beginning, I'm really not being funny, but tell me how in the world, especially when it's one of the big four accounting firms, they were appointed as an independent third party to monitor the proceedings in this creditor protection case. And Ernst & Young announced that 103 bitcoins valued at the time of the happening at $500,000 to Quadriga Cold Wallets, which then the company was not able to access ever again. And now those coins would be worth about $1 million, just to let you know. I just think, again, that EY should be held very accountable for this, especially if they were given the role of overseeing this. So it's like, these are millions of dollars, $1.6 million in fees, $1 million now that's evaporated in Bitcoin. I think someone's really taking the proverbial piss here. I mean, it's really crazy. And if you were a client of this exchange and you saw your money evaporate and then you see all these shenanigans going on, you think to yourself, this is nuts. And this is exactly the kind of stuff which should not be happening under EY's watch. It is so damned irresponsible. So why can't somebody in the legal system in Canada go and charge EY with negligence?
That's a great question. And they should. In fact, I personally believe that given the allegations and given the seriousness of the allegations, it's quite possible when we see the final report to the court. I don't know whether that's made public in Canada or not. If that is the case, if they do have that much Bitcoin unaccounted for under their watch, then they should forego that amount in fees.
Absolutely. I think that's the most
acceptable case, but
it's morally the right thing to do.
Of course
it is. The fact that they would lose 103 bitcoins worth $1 million and then take 1.6 million in fees, they should have turned around and said, we really screwed up, we're only going to take 600,000. But no, it's just so money grubbing and just so damned greedy. And there are victims here who are watching this play out that I'd be embarrassed to work for EY. I mean, seriously embarrassed to the point I would quit my job. I'm not working for these people anymore. They are literally laughing in the faces of the victims, I feel. I'm so, so happy, and it's very selfish for me to say this, that I'm not a client of Quadriga, because I'd be insane right now. You think that this is a rant I'm having right now on the radio? You would have to see if I was an actual client of this thing. I'd be going bananas. I'd be like the person holding a sign in front of EY and the Canadian headquarters, because I would not be happy. Just like they're not happy. I mean, a lot of these users are very unhappy. A lot of the victims are very, very unhappy about this. And it's just a shame that one foul paw after the other is just happening, and seemingly to the chagrin of everybody except for the victims. I just feel for them so much. I felt for them in the first instance, but this is just completely out of order.
I completely agree. I think that it's gross and definitely negligent. I remember one trader has told me that if you haven't sent the wrong amount of money to a crypto wallet, then you haven't been in crypto long enough. And I think we all have one of those experiences when we were neophytes. But for them to do it at this level under this type of scrutiny just preposterous.
It is. And I understand if you're sitting 300 maybe. Come on, not $1 million. Come on.
Yeah, and you do a test, right? If you're about to make a transfer that large,
of course,
you do, $5, $10, hell, even $1. You know what I mean? You send a penny through the machine and see if it gets to the right location. But for them to do this, something like this, And like I said, you know, regardless of whether it's a cold wallet or hard wallet or hot wallet or any kind of thing, you've got to kind of test something when it's a transaction that large. But yeah, I feel for the victims of Quadriga, and I know that, you know, they have every right to be pissed off and disappointed and everything that's happened. I mean, from the very beginning of this story, since we've talked about it, they have unfortunately been given a raw deal. And I think it's going to be a valuable lesson, unfortunately, like Mt. Gox was.
This is Hollywood movie material. Matter of fact, I'm going to announce it right now. Everyone, I'm going to be writing a movie script about this whole entire thing. So stay tuned and just wait for a couple of months. I'll have this thing out on B-roll. Now, there is one other thing I do want to say. A couple of weeks ago, I interviewed Tomoko Discovery, who are a crypto forensic firm. And they go and they trace people down. They actually work with governments. I am unashamedly inviting Tomoko Discovery to please go and find, on behalf of the victims of Quadriga, help us find where EY has misplaced this money, or however you want to phrase it. I guess that's where we'll leave this one before we move on to what's happening in China. Anything more to add, Jonathan?
If you are a victim of Quadriga, make sure you pay attention to the filings and, you know, submit your documentation as soon as you can. Like I said, it's generally going to be one of those situations where you're last in line, but at least you're in line. That being said, if you are a victim of this situation, you know, you also want to talk to a financial representative that does your taxes, because this is considered an absolute loss in most cases under the law. So even if you recover some of the money, you're able to write off at least the remainder, for the most part, at least in the U.S. Talk to a licensed tax professional to get guidance on that.
This is actually a good segue to talk about how the IRS is now beginning their tax clampdowns on unreported cryptocurrency profits. Apparently, they've already started to send out letters. Apparently, the IRS has already started to send out letters to crypto traders telling them that they have not reported their income correctly. In other words, they've misreported their income. So what do you have to say about that?
So anytime the government contacts you, you need to contact the appropriate professional.
You mean a lawyer?
A lawyer or an accountant in this case. But, you know, they have to understand the space. And I can personally say that I have been contacted by a very good colleague at the IRS who's looking for whales. So if you're a whale out there listening to this, they are whale hunting. And the IRS is one of the few, it's not a criminal justice agency, but it is one of the few agencies that truly believes in deterrence. And there's studies that show it actually works, which is why they go after movie stars and all those kind of things like that. So if you are a U.S. whale, or you believe that you fall under U.S. jurisdiction, you need to definitely contact a lawyer or a crypto accountant. It needs to be a crypto accountant, because the IRS treats this stuff as property. So if you have not sold, or you have sold a little bit here and there, you have to kind of account for all this stuff. The other kind of important information, and of course, this is all advisory, none of this is legal advice, but you need to simply have that tax professional, and they'll do it for you, is contact the IRS and ask them how much you owe, or how much they think you owe, because they're required under law to give you that information. I don't recommend you do it yourself. This is not a DIY kind of situation. The IRS is more powerful, arguably, than the FBI and the DOJ. And I always tell the story that Al Capone was brought down by the IRS and not the FBI. So be very cognizant of that. But if you are someone with substantial crypto assets and you've received one of these letters, please contact someone, a professional, licensed in your appropriate jurisdiction. Even if you're abroad, you're legally, as a U.S. citizen, even if you've lived abroad for either a number of years, you're still required to report your total income. It's where you see a bunch of wealthy individuals giving up their U.S. citizenship a couple of years ago when this law came into place. If you think that you may be on the IRS's watch list, be sure to reach out as soon as possible, because things can get very ugly very fast, especially with the IRS. When I joke in the U.S.
Well, according to Justin Woodward, who is a tax attorney, he gave a very simple explanation as well, which I think I'll just read out loud here. Apparently, if you make a trade for $100,000 on a platform, so for instance, if you buy, let's say, one Bitcoin for $100,000 and then sell it a couple of weeks later for $90,000, you would have a $10,000 loss. But you would have a 1099-K that still says you received $90,000. So what he said was, it's clear that investing large sums of money into crypto is actually a little bit riskier decision than thought. And until the regulators and IRS are able to catch up with the latest crypto technologies, basically these tax demand letters will continue to be sent out. So again, Jonathan's advice is the best one. If you get a letter, go and see a professional. I would go see a lawyer and a crypto accountant, because there's never enough room to be too cautious in these cases.
Exactly. I mean, especially if you have substantial assets. It's the cost of doing business.
I'd like to thank you, Jonathan, and I look forward to having you again onto the show.
I thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure is all ours. So again, everyone, thank you for listening to this week's Crypto and Blockchain Talk. I would like to invite you to ask your friends and family to also download us on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbeam, and Spotify, amongst the many other channels that are on our CryptoAndBlockchainTalk.com website. And I'm very happy to announce that we're now on Acast and Podcaster. And in addition, I'd like to ask you to leave nice comments on Facebook and like us on Twitter. And if you have any comments or anything that you would like us to address on Crypto and Blockchain Talk, please email us at education@savvydigital.com. That is education@savvydigital.com. Again, thank you so much for tuning in this week. We love having you as our listener, and we look forward to having you again as our listener next week. Take care and goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the CryptoCast podcast. Stay tuned in for more episodes.